Hi there, I'm Marianne Lozano, president of the Broadleaf Board of Directors and the conference chair for the 9th Annual Broadleaf Writers Conference, to be held September 21st and 22nd at the Decatur Library in Decatur, Georgia. Our list of speakers features 12 amazing authors, 6 agents and editors, and is headlined by the number one New York Times bestselling author, Mary Kay Andrews. Through March 31st, we're offering an early bird special on registration, giving you the opportunity to attend both days for the one-day price. This will be the last chance to get this deal before registration opens officially on May 1st, so take advantage now. To register today or to learn more about the 9th Annual Broadleaf Writers Conference, I hope you'll visit our website at broadleafwriters.com. See you this fall!
Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of Right Now, a podcast on the craft and business of writing, presented to you by Broadleaf Writers Association based in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Zachary Steele, and on today's episode, I'm pleased to welcome Christopher Swan, the author of 5 novels, including Never Back Down, the third book in the Faulkner Family Thriller series. As an author of a series, as well as 2 standalone novels, Chris and I are going to discuss the process of plotting for a series, how it compares to plotting a standalone novel, and how you can streamline your efforts to do either. So let's get started. Hey, Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm great, man. How you doing, Zach?
I am fabulous. And I mean that in the most sarcastic way possible. I've been dealing with a shoulder injury and it's been problematic, but everything else is fine. Yeah, everything's good. Everything's good.
I mean, getting older sucks, except it's better than the alternative, right?
This is true. As I tell everybody that doesn't like having birthdays, that the alternative to not having a birthday is pretty final. So, but anyway, we're starting dark. Let's roll with it. We're going to talk a little bit about plotting, because one of the things that comes up a lot in writerly conversations is, do you outline or do you not outline? Are you a pantser? Are you a plotter? I very much am an outliner. I have to have that structure, and I have to know where it's going. And, you know, I need to know what the house looks like before I move in, kind of thing. And I'm very interested to hear, your point on this, because you've written not only 2 standalone novels, but you've also got, so far, 3 books in a series. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how the approach differs for you. You know, before we get into the nuts and bolts of what you do, is there a difference between plotting or outlining for a standalone novel versus a series?
Short answer is yes. The longer answer is that plotting is sort of a mystery to me. Mm-hmm. I'm a product of creative writing programs, and in my experience, and I learned a lot from them, and I'm very grateful to them, but they tend to emphasize the quality of your prose and your characterization over plot. Plot is sort of a vestigial thing that, like, okay, you'll pick that up, and yes, you have to have a beginning, middle, and end. Yeah, you learn how to write very beautiful. I mean, a criticism, and I've said this before, of creative writing programs is you learn how to write very beautifully about not very much. And I've always liked stories where stuff happens to them, in them. And it doesn't always have to be a guy or a girl with a gun, but I like to write about crime. And so that typically does happen. Every novel's different. I feel very good about coming up with an opening situation and going from there. But I have learned through the process of writing all my books that, yeah, you need to have a strong sense of where you want to end it. Now, that doesn't have to be set in concrete. You can shift it around. You can move it. No one's keeping score. Don't worry about that. But I used to break out at hives at the idea of ending. How am I going to end this? And so my first novel, Shadow of the Lions, it opens up with the narrator's best friend vanishes and no one finds him. And 9 years later, they still haven't found him. I didn't know what had happened to the best friend. I just came up with a situation and said, I'll just figure it out as I write. And it turns out that's a terrible way for me, at least, to write a mystery. Mm-hmm. So
kind of hard to build in components of the mystery if you don't know where it ends.
Right. You can't write it the way you read it. Mm-hmm. I think there's some people who do. But I figured it took me a while to figure it out is I needed to answer a few questions. Okay. What happened to him? What does the narrator find out and how? Once I answered those questions and wrote down the answers, they were kind of my guideposts. And I could make up all the stuff that happened in between, but I figured out, I think I want to end it in this note. And I need to keep the reader engaged in the mystery in a way where they don't figure it out immediately. You know, I call it butler or aliens, like the butler did it. How surprising. I figured that out in page 20. Or, you know, like aliens took them. I didn't realize that was the sort of book, you know, just some sort of random plot device. So once I got that figured out, I could kind of play with everything. And every novel I've written has started out sort of that way. But since the first one, I've gotten better about coming up with an ending. And in terms of a series, like that's very different. I remember Jocelyn Jackson, great writer, and a friend of mine who's also done the audiobooks for my last two books. She said when Never Go Home came out, she goes, "Oh, now you've got a series." And that was the first time somebody else had actually mentioned it to me. I thought, yeah, I kind of do now. And it suddenly felt real. And then I got scared thinking, okay, God, what am I going to do? How do I keep this going? And I know I'm kind of approaching your question in a long roundabout answer, but it's sort of how it evolved. I didn't set out to write a series. I wrote Never Turn Back as a standalone. That was my second book, and it was the hardest thing I've ever written. The second novel syndrome is real, everybody. I thought I knew what I was doing, and my laptop just laughed at me. So I wrestled with this thing and rewrote it. And then sent it out in sub, and then rewrite it and send it out again. And after spending so much time with it, I had the end of the story, but the characters that I'd written stuck around in my head, especially the sister of the protagonist, Ethan, his sister Susie, stuck around with me so much and said, "Yeah, you're not done with me." And I didn't want to let those characters go. So I thought, well, what do I do now? How do I turn this? How do I write a sequel? And I've read a lot of series and enjoyed a lot of series. I mean, Hardy Boys and Sherlock Holmes as a kid, you know, Dennis Lehane's Kenzie and Gennaro series, Martin Christmas, Arkady Renko series, Tana French, Brian Panowich, Tom Mullen. I could go on. But they tend to break, those books kind of break into two camps. You have a core set of characters, central characters who mostly stay the same while the situations in each book change, or you have one central character, kind of like Murder, She Wrote. Remember that TV show? Who just goes
I
to
do remember that.
Anytime Angela Lansbury shows up, you know, you leave
because yes, exactly.
Someone's going to die.
Somebody's going to die.
And, you know, she goes to a new place. And there, I didn't watch the show regularly, but, you know, it seemed like she was in a new situation and new characters, you know, every week. And I tend to be more the former, where you have a core set of characters. Once I finished the first book and realized, no, I'd like to keep going with these folks. My protagonist, my main character in Never Turn Back, Ethan, I felt like I'd kind of told his story. He had a story arc and it had finished. It had ended where I wanted it to. But his sister, who I'd introduced as the crazy sort of side character, she took up a lot of real estate in my brain. And
it takes up a lot of real estate in everybody's life. So not just your brain.
And well, that's good to hear. But no, the first thing I wrote with her, and I've told this story before too. She's a kid and she's supposed to eat some peas and they're cold. She's going to complain about it. In my head, she said no. And I said, "What do you mean no?" I didn't have this conversation really, but it felt like it. And she's like, "No, I'm not going to eat them." And I said, "Yeah, you are. I'm the writer. You will eat them." And I made her eat them and the scene died and I couldn't write anything. And so I closed the laptop, went away, came back and said, fine, you refuse to eat the peas. And in my head, she said, thank you. And the scene went on from there. It's like I learned how to write again.
I totally feel you. I had working on a manuscript once, and I had this character who was hiding behind a couch. And I'm like, why in the world is she hiding behind a couch? And so I was stuck. I didn't know how to get out of it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do something really weird here. And I'm going to open up a document and I'm going to interview her. And I'm just going to have this stream of consciousness thing. And I was like, so just some generic questions to get a roll with. And then kind of like, so why are you hiding behind the couch? And she said, well, the keepers are coming. And I was like, who are the keepers? I don't even know. And it ended up being this amazing piece of the story. So I totally get it. It's one of those things that makes writers seem very, very loony, but the characters will throw a fit, or yeah, they will I'm not going through that door.
Whenever I tell the story, other people who are writers, they most of them nod their heads mm-hmm. and go, yeah. And people and readers are like, what? Some of them laugh. Some of them, they look at me like, you know, is he all right? Exactly. Like, no, I'm not. I wasn't hallucinating her. This is the kind of thing that happens in your imagination all the time.
Yeah. Do we need to worry about his wife?
Yeah. She's a psychologist. It's all right. Oh. When I pivoted, I said, okay, Susie's got stories to tell, because I'd already told Ethan's, and his was kind of a fish out of water. My uncle is involved in crime, and I, as a teenager, I kind of flirted with it and decided not to get into that world. And as an adult, he gets sucked back into it because he needs help. And that story resolves. And I thought, do I just want to do that again? No, I kind of told the story, but the other characters I'd created, I liked Ethan, but I loved Susie. I loved Uncle Gavin, Caesar and Frankie, and some other characters, Gus Cimino, Brandon Cargill, and Finn, who I invented him for the next book, next two. They were kind of the family, for better or worse. And I liked Susie's character, and she's she and I have very little in common. She's a 20-something sexually fluid woman who knows how to use firearms and hand-to-hand combat. I'm a 50-something cisgender white guy who has been in one fist fight in my life, and it was accidental when somebody tried to steal my UNC hat off my head. And I was 12. I'm diplomatic and kind of tend to avoid, you know, controversy or conflict. And Susie has little to no filter and has no problem with conflict or violence. So she feels like it's justifiable. So she gets to do all kinds of things I would never do. So in terms for a writer, that's gold. It's fun to spin stories with her. She creates conflict wherever she goes, kind of like a whirling dervish. I decided I've got to figure out what her story is, and however many books I write with her in it, I want each one to be kind of self-contained, but the surrounding cast of characters, new ones get introduced all the time, but that cast, that family stays the same, or if there is a change, it's a dramatic, and that's something you have to kind of play with. Like, I've only read one Jack Reacher novel, and I saw the first season of the I think it was Amazon show, which was a lot of fun, but like Jack Reacher is sort of a knight errant who stays pretty much the same from book to book. He doesn't change, and some people, that's comforting, you know. Mm-hmm. Life is right. All about change. It's sort of fun. Part of me wants to keep Susie the same, but I realize, and the people around her, but that's not real life. And so right. I have to kind of keep, in a way you don't with a standalone book, you have to kind of think down the road, what is this going to lead to?
Yeah.
And file that away and write a note and make a note of it and then just keep going with the story. But remember, down the road, I mean, I've had to go back and look at my old books to think, wait, did I already do that? Mm-hmm. Can I do that now? Oh no. Right. In this book, I said this person had died. I can't use them again or whatever.
Yeah, so you didn't have the experience in the first book because you thought it was a standalone, but as you were writing the second one, and it actually will go before the writing, as you're constructing the story, as you're working on an outline and plotting it out, yeah. Did you find yourself building more of those moments into the story that you could carry forward in an overall arc?
That's a good question. I don't think I consciously did. I think that I would create moments, I'd write scenes, and I tend to kind of, like I said, come up with guideposts, places I know I need to get to, and roughly when I need to get to them in the story. And then I'll write a scene like, huh, that's interesting. I didn't intend for that to happen. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Susie has to get from one place to another in the second book in Atlanta. She just has to get, and she takes Marta. And, you know, if you're not familiar with Marta, if you're listening and you're not familiar with Marta in Atlanta, it's our version of public transit. You know, Boston and New York, and this, they don't really need to worry about competition. You know, the DC Metro lines. It's basically got two lines.
It's transit without logic.
Yes. You know, it's a cross in the middle. If Atlanta is a big circle, it's like a cross right in the middle of that circle. And if you live in one of the arms, like, that's great. Otherwise, no. But it works for where she needs to go. And and I don't know where this came from, but she's on Marta, and she overhears this couple who are near her with a kid, and she's watching the kids in a stroller, and the kid is just playing with their blanket, and she's Susie has virtually no maternal instincts. She's sort of a high functioning sociopath. She likes some people, but people just sort of annoy her in general. And she's fascinated and repelled by children. She's just not really repelled by, but she's like, I can't imagine having one. But she's watching the husband and wife, and the husband is just sort of loud whispering in an argument with his wife, like, why are you on my, I told you to stop getting me, I'm doing the best I can, in belittling her. That's the kind of conversation where most of us hear, and we put our heads down and look deeper into our phones, or kind of turn away, and we're like, God, I wish they'd stop. Susie, of course, is the kind of like, hey, pal, why don't you stop yelling at your wife? And she does that, mm-hmm. and stops him, but ends up stopping him in a somewhat violent way. Nobody dies or is maimed or anything, but she suddenly realizes that she is the person that now everyone on the train is scared of, because of how she handles this guy. And that kind of makes her sick. And I don't know where that scene came from, but I really enjoyed it once I'd written a rough draft of it and I went back and polished it, because that's a moment I'm like, yeah, I'm going to come back to this down the road. Susie does not always make the right choices socially. Mm-hmm. She doesn't always get the social cues. She's not on the spectrum in any way, but she's just sort of, part of her just doesn't really care in a way that most of us do care. We're concerned, like, what do people think of us? What's the right thing to do in this situation? Oh my God, I don't want to make them mad at me. Susie could largely care less, which causes problems. And she realizes that's not always the right move to make. And so I come back to that. She realizes now I'm the crazy person. And so I find moments like that when I write and think, I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to make this. I'm going to make this a touchstone somehow down the road. And I'll put a little note off to the side. Mm-hmm. And go.
So it seems like a lot of your series building then would be more retroactive, meaning
to some extent, yes. I mean, I'll think ahead, like, okay, I don't want Ethan's the protagonist in the first book, Never Turn Back, and then he's kind of done. Now he's a secondary character, and so his role has changed. And I thought, and I wrote a lot about what he thought of Susie and why he had to take care of Susie. He's the older brother, and Susie doesn't want to be taken care of. Now I'm writing Susie's story, and I have to think, okay, how does she look at her brother? And so then I have to kind of plot out, what is the relationship and what's it going to be like? And I'll come up with broad strokes, but those moments, like the train car one, or a scene where I realize, you know, now, because Ethan has now become her, she's basically Susie's version of normal.
Mm-hmm.
She and her brother both suffered. They're both orphaned at a young age in a violent home invasion, and they're taken in by their uncle Gavin. And they both react very, very differently to that trauma. Ethan kind of buries it and moves on and becomes a teacher and has a very successful life. And he's fine. It's all fine. No, it's not. But he acts like it is. Susie is already sort of broken and angry and pissed off. And so she wants to find the person that killed her, their parents, and kill them. That situation gets resolved in the first book, and I thought, okay, what do I do with her now? And how does that, what's her relationship like with her brother now? What does she, how does she see her brother now? And so then I have to kind of build that out and say, okay, here, I want to get to this point and this point and this point. But yeah, there will be, there's a lot of retroactive stuff that goes, I leave space for, okay, I need to go back. I use Scrivener to write, which is a great program for a lot of writers. It's got a lot of bells and whistles you don't need, but one thing it's got is a really good way to sort of organize chapters and notes and scenes. And I don't necessarily write linearly. You just need to look at my desk and you're like, oh, okay, that's your brain. Yeah. And so that helps me. So if I get that idea, I can pop that on like a little virtual note card and put it over here in this file, rather than having some big Word document where I have to scan through the whole thing, or have multiple Word documents. I'm not sure where I put where. So that helps.
Yeah, Scrivener is a lifesaver for a writer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's helped me if I do sort of go, okay, that's a moment I want to come back to. But plotting to the third book in the series, the second book ends in a cliffhanger, and the third book takes off sometime after that, but is directly related to what happened in book two. That's the one where I had to do the most plotting and going back and making sure that I described these characters correctly back the first time. Did I use that name? Was that the cop's name? Yes. Yes, it was. Were they blonde? No, they were dark haired. Well, I can't change that because it's already in print. So I'll change it. And little things like that, I just got to make sure of. That's the sort of thing. So if you're reading it, I want people to read it and feel like, okay, I know who these people are. The author knows who these people are and is consistent with them.
Yeah.
And, cares about them, because I do, and I want to do them justice. So
right. Yeah. And I actually wanted to ask you about that, because whereas the first book in the series was written as a standalone, so it has a very closed feel to the story arc, Never Back Down, which came out last July, right? Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is the third book following up Never Turned Back, and there is connective tissue between the two. And no, home, yeah. Yeah, and I'm sorry. Yeah,
no worries. Yeah, yeah. I know. So I came up with the titles, and never. I thought that was clever. The problem is then it's for me. I have to think. Okay, which
right.
Which one is it? But anyway,
never something. No. Yeah. Sorry about that. But you have the connective tissue. So as you were working through book two, how much of book three existed for you in your head? You know, of that story, how much had you already worked through to connect to, or did it all evolve once you had finished book two?
As I was writing book two and I was going to get near the ending where there's this dramatic, there's going to be this dramatic confrontation between Susie and this guy named Finn, who's tied to her family's past, knew her and Ethan's father, obviously before he died when he served in the armed forces in Iraq. I thought the animosity I've created between these two characters is kind of big, and I don't think it's enough to end it in one book. I think I'm going to have to keep going, because I didn't want to, again, I wrestle with endings, and I didn't want there to be some sort of like a neat bow and it's all tied together, it's all fine. It's one thing to do that with standalone books, although I kind of resist that a little bit there. But I think especially in a series, you don't want to tie everything neatly because these people, you know, these people are going to then go on. You know, it's like, I mean, you as a kid, like I grew up watching shows like Magnum PI, and they were basically, you know, hour long, sort of dramas, crime stories, and but everything got tied up neatly at the end. And that episode was then closed off and done. And the next episode, same characters, but a whole new series of escapades they have to go through. And I didn't really feel like, I don't think writing books is exactly the same thing, at least not for me. There are things that happen in a previous book that then echo later in a way that you didn't get in TV shows. Like now, today in television is very different. But, you know, back in the day, it was okay. Now we got to write another 47-minute episode to cram into an hour with ads, and you have to have this arc and this flashpoint, and we have to end here, and then done. And we can't kill the main character or any of the other characters because we got them under contract for the whole season. In the novel, I feel like it's novels are different. While I was writing the second novel, I thought I don't want to end this where okay, Finn, the bad guy, this is just going to end. And I thought, well, if I do have him, if he and Susie continue this conflict, how do I end this book and how do I carry it over into the next one? And so I started plotting out the next one. I knew where I wanted to start it, and I started it where I wanted to. I wasn't sure where it was going to end, but I didn't want to end it yet. That might be right why I don't write a lot of short stories. I can't imagine writing a story and ending it in 10 pages. That's a whole different art form, and the people who master it are masters. And yeah. I'm in awe of them. That's why I write novels. I don't have to finish them for 300-400 pages. We're in a series. Just keep going.
Yeah, this is true. Just keep going.
But so that's kind of where I am with that, is thinking, okay, now I'm going to plot this out. Okay. Yeah, and that freed me up. I felt with ending Never Go Home, because now, okay, I know what I'm going to do. There's going to be a climactic moment. There's going to be some kind of closure. There will be an ending. And yet, there's also going to be a through line to take you to the next book.
Sure. And dealing with the siblings for a moment, you know, one mm-hmm. of the primary functions that we have as a writer is to write flawed characters, because human beings are inherently flawed, and that is interesting. With yeah. These highly flawed characters that you have created, are you looking to resolve any of those flaws? Obviously, we've already sort of touched on this a little bit, but are you looking to resolve any of their flaws within one story arc, or is it part of the sort of greater journey for them?
For Susie, it's definitely part of a greater journey. I think the central character, I think if you give a flaw to a character, a big one, and you tie it up within a single novel, and it's not if it's a standalone novel, it's its own little self-encapsulated world, that's fine. If you're writing a series and then everything is, you know, hunky-dory at the end of book one, and you're going to have a new problem for them in book two, and then a new flaw in book three, that can get a little repetitive and maybe kind of strain that willing suspension of disbelief. Ethan and his story, I felt like I'd kind of told his story and he'd had an arc. And he was in a good place at the end of book one. He was in a better place than he was at the beginning of book one anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I'd kind of, and he'd kind of resolved some of his own personal demons. Susie's were not resolved, and they were not going to be easily resolved. And definitely not as a secondary character. And even with her as a narrator, not in book two. And so I thought I got to keep this going with her. I mean, her issue is, like I said earlier, she's not great with people. The few people she cares about, she loves fiercely. And what she's found out she loves about her brother is that he's sort of the proxy for her for a normal life. For her, she's like, look, I do. She has the skill set that once book one was finished, I thought, what is somebody with Susie's skill set do, become a mercenary? Like that didn't make sense to me for her. So she operates in the gray areas, sort of right outside the law, and finds people who are missing, especially women. Unfortunately, a whole lot of people go missing in the United States alone. Like maybe several hundred thousand, many of them within a year are back home, but a lot of those are, a certain significant percentage are not. So that seemed to me a good thing for her to be able to do. She's found a sense of purpose, and she knows it's dangerous to her, but as long as Ethan is home and is teaching and has his normal life, she feels like it's okay. So that I found a way to make Ethan okay and quote unquote normal, while Susie is still wrestling with her own stuff. And she has to kind of figure out how do I deal with people and how do I, and she knows how to interact with people. It takes a little bit of effort with her. And again, she doesn't have much filter. And she finds somebody she's attracted to in book two and maybe in book three. And she's like, so what do I do with that? I don't know how to do I and that was a whole lot of fun for me to write.
Yeah, I imagine so.
So
Yeah. Well, let's look at it from a nuts and bolts standpoint on your process for outlining. So when you are building a story, what does that look like for you? Are you creating various scenes and then eventually reorganizing them? Or are you said you're not a linear writer, but are you very linear in your approach to building the story before you start writing?
I have tended to I'll come up with a character and come up, like, start describing them a little bit, come up with some basic facts. And then I tend to write a scene, an initial scene with him or her, where I kind of figure out their language, how they deal with people, and try to make it so it's not exactly the same as other characters I've written. When I was writing Susie, especially because she's so different than I am. She's not only in age, but gender, sexuality. I wanted to make sure that I got her right. I didn't want her to sound like a guy who I just sort of put a wig on and went, okay, so that's a girl, right? And I had to find that, I had to find their voice. And so I tend to do that by writing a scene or scenes. And I did that in Never Go Home. I already had the opening scene where she's, and it's kind of outrageous where she's got this sleaze ball tied up in an abandoned warehouse that she's questioning, because she's looking for this girl who's missing and he knows where she is. And I had a whole lot of fun having her interact with him and question him. It's an interrogation. I guess you could technically say that she's torturing him, but it's not that kind of, there's no, it's not gross and it's not gratuitous, but especially from Susie's standpoint. But I found her voice there, and I know I'd written her in an earlier book, but now I was having her actually narrate a story, and that was different. And I found if I do that with in all the other books I've written, if I do that at the beginning, then I get the characters down. And then I see if there's anything I've written, I'm like, huh, that's interesting. I want to pursue that conflict. Or, huh, why did she say that to this other person? Who is this other person? Wait, who is this friend I've just invented? Why is there a dog? Why do I have a dog? Does I have, now you got to deal with a dog. Okay, well, actually, that could open up something. Now there's something they got to care about. And then I feel like, okay, now I know the characters, now I know the story. It's a little different with the series because by the time I got to book three, I know all these characters very, very well, and so I didn't need to pause to do much of that. But the other books, yes, I'll come up with ideas for some of the characters. I'll write a very rough outline. I'll write the opening scene until I'm happy with it, and then I'll start plotting out certain scenes. I need to do this, this, and this. And then I'll just start writing. And if I get stuck at a scene, but I know what's going to happen, but it's not working yet, I know what the next scene's going to be. I can jump forward and write the next scene. I know a lot of writers are like, I can't possibly do that. I got to get this right. And it might be, I gotta get this first before I move on to the next one. And it can be challenging sometimes to go back and then have to write the earlier scene and make sure to retrofit it in a way. But so I try to write linearly as best I can, but sometimes I'm like, I don't, or if I have it set in a place where I need to go do some research in this, but I really need to keep, I don't want to spend the next hour on Google Maps. I just want to go to the next, I want to keep writing, I want to put words down on the page. Then I can skip ahead. But I don't, it's not like I write one scene, then I write something near the end, then I write something near the middle, and then I go make some spaghetti, and then I come back and I'll make it, I'll write another scene. I'm not that chaotic, but
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, how has, now that you have officially found yourself in the series waters, how has that influenced your writing going forward? Do you want to continue working within the confines of the series, or do you still want to bounce back and forth with standalone novels?
It's funny to talk about the confines of a series, because you're right. If you write a, you're kind of stuck, quote unquote, with these characters, but there's actually something sort of freeing about it too.
Well, it does, it opens up the entire world of story, and I do mean that maybe confines might not be the right word there,
but it is. You're right. There's this. It's a confine. It's a different kind of. It's a different kind of fence. And don't you love how writers, like, we'll just use metaphor all the time.
That's exactly right. Or argue over a word.
I'm writing, like, right now I'm writing a standalone, and there's something about blocking out a distinct space for a complete one-off story that'll get my creative juices flowing. With a series, you've got more time to kind of expand the world and expand the characters and do things. You're like, I don't have to tie it up in this book. I can continue this to the next one. You know, you want to get your characters' hopes and fears and dreams right. And that's kind of freeing, but there's a story I heard about George Lucas in Star Wars. And it's famous at this point, but when he was writing Star Wars, he wanted complete control. And the studio said, absolutely not. You've done one film before this. It was a student film, pretty much. And then you're going to do this thing. He was, the studio kept saying no, and kept putting constraints on him. And that sounds horrible until you realize what, you go back and look. I mean, Luke Skywalker was going to be called Luke Starkiller. Everyone was going to have a lightsaber. It was going to be ubiquitous. The title of the movie, I can't even remember because it was so long and convoluted. Han Solo was going to be some kind of frog man. All these things, you're like, no, no, no. And because of constraints like that, that sometimes that forces you to get creative. R2-D2 wasn't going to go beep, 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 beep. He was going to have a voice, but they couldn't hear the actor who was in the tin can, because that's how they were trying to do the voice. Like, maybe we can dub it in later. No. And then they came up with the, okay, we'll do the beep, beep. And that's iconic. You can't, can you imagine that being changed?
Right.
I say it because if you do put constraints, if there are constraints, whether it's space, time, you know, plot, whatever, that forces you as a writer to get creative. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So, and there's some stories that should be over once you close the book, but they should be standalones. And I like writing those. And I like the one I'm writing now. It scares me, but I think that's what the best books kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
All that being said, I have at least, well, I have one more Susie Faulkner book in me that would reveal a lot about her Uncle Gavin and his past, and show Susie in kind of a new light, and it would be set forward a little bit in the future from where she is at the end of Never Back Down, a few years. But, you know, my publisher's going to want to have to, you know, be willing to publish a new Faulkner family thriller. So those of you who are listening, go out and you know, supply and demand, go out and yes, purchase
exactly.
one. But I like the idea of the suit, but I only want to do it if I find characters like Susie worth pursuing over kind of the long haul, and especially if they got a cast of characters around them.
Mm-hmm.
But standalones, those are their own sort of, there's some, like if you finish a really, really good book and you're sad it's over, and it's sort of bittersweet, there's something kind of perfect about that. It's almost like certain movies that then they make a sequel to and you go, oh God, why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't do that. Don't try to remake it. Why are you doing, like, no. You know, people, their people wanted to remake The Princess Bride or try to write a scene. Like, that's what's been, and they've been roundly, by everyone's like, no. Like, the only people that think that's a good idea are moneymakers in Hollywood. They're like, oh, we could cash in on this.
Well, who don't understand how the system works.
Right. And then there's some, and there are books that, you know, you don't need to turn to a series. And there are some that, in this case, did. A Fire in the Night, that was meant to be a standalone, and yet I've had, and Shadow of the Lions is a standalone, my first book, but in Shadow of the Lions I had people who came up and said, so what happens to them at the end? It's like, what are you talking about? They're like, well, your main character Matthias and Abby, they have this relationship, does it work out? What happens next? Because I didn't end that, I didn't tie that, and I said, I don't know, the story's done. And I kind of thought, well, could I go back to those characters? But I think I'm actually kind of done with them.
Yeah, I understand.
The Fire in the Night, Nick Anthony and his niece, Annalise, they were a whole lot of fun to write. I could go back and write, maybe do something with them. Because that was a lot of fun to write a man and a woman, different ages, who are not romantically linked in any way, their family, but they're strangers. And what would it be like to be a 16-year-old girl? Now you're on the run, you're afraid for your life, you think your parents are dead, and you know, you have this uncle you've never known. This uncle's like, who are you? Who's this kid I got to deal with? They were a lot of fun, and I left that story a little bit open to things that could happen in the future. I have no idea. That's something that could happen. So yeah, the short answer to your question is yeah, I would like to, if possible, I'll bounce back and forth between the two.
Yeah, totally understand. Well, Chris, I appreciate your time today and for sharing, you know, your process for creating stories in both standalone and series. I feel like we could do this for a very long time, but
same here, Zach.
Yeah,
I appreciate it though.
Yeah,
I
no
also
problem.
Think it's cute you think I have a process, but yeah,
everybody has a process.
Such as it is, I'm happy to share.
I get into the pants versus plotters arguments with people, I think sometimes just because it's fun. But I feel like it's a bogus question, because even if you aren't writing an outline, you have something in your head that you are writing to. And so therefore, even on a mental level, you are outlining it. But it's fun. It's fun to have conversations with writers and find out what their approach is. We'll eliminate the word process for you. What their approach is to creating story.
Well, yeah, because it's hard. I think it was Sherwood Anderson said there are three rules to writing a novel. Unfortunately, no one knows what they are. Pam or Somerset Maugham or somebody. But I remember that and thought that's kind of right. So I'm happy to talk with you anytime, Zach. It was fun.
Sure.
And happy to share. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
No problem. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Get my website is ChristopherSwan2ns.com. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, I refuse to call it X, or Instagram.
I actually now just refer to it as X Twitter. It's the only thing that I can
Twitter. Yeah, I can't remember. But yeah, you can find me there under Swanee Author. But my website's the best place to find links to my books and to upcoming events and so on.
Excellent. All right, Chris. Well, I look forward to talking to you soon, and best to you with your writing and to your family.
Thanks, Zach. Same to you.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, man.